Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by a real serious improv podcaster. Tonight's review, Spatula for the Stars. When I'm dead and civilization eventually collapses, this spatula will remain. It will be the only rune uncovered by some unknown species of the future upon which they base their assumptions of our existence.
Eggs!
They will posit.
These extinct people like to eat their eggs! And this was their primary tool for cooking them. Let us teleport and put this device in the Milky Way exhibit.
5 stars, Zachary. Find your perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hi, everyone. It's Kendall.
And Josh from Mile Higher Media.
And as most of you guys know, last September, we launched our foundation, the Higher Hope Foundation. And honestly, it's been pleasantly surprising how much we have been able to do in our first year, thanks to all of you. The amount of grants that we have been able to offer to victims, families of victims, as well as similar-minded nonprofits in the advocacy space, it's just been an amazing first year.
Yeah, we just wanted to thank you so much for all of your support out there, whether you've given a donation, whether you've purchased merch, which again, all merchandise at milehighermerch.com, 100% of proceeds goes to the Higher Hope Foundation. So that's been absolutely huge for the foundation since we've made that change. But also just by viewing our content, listening to our content, or supporting any of our sponsors, all of that goes into funding the grants that the Higher Hope Foundation is able to give.
And so far in 2025, we've disbursed over $210,000 in grants, scholarships, and projects, and we've also processed over 25 grants.
And right now, we are in our season of giving, and we're only $40,000 shy of reaching our full impact goal. So obviously, we'd love to meet this goal, and we intend to meet this goal. Closing this gap means helping 8 more families or organizations that are still waiting for the help that they deserve.
And so every gift, no matter the size, and by the way, every single cent that you donate goes directly to grants, 100% of that. And every little bit of it makes a huge difference for us and will help people who are still waiting.
And during our season of giving, we're going to be matching every dollar up to $50,000 of donations that are made during this time. And if we reach our goal, we'll also reach our year-end impact goal, which will be huge for the foundation and huge for all of those out there who need help.
Yeah, and it will allow us to start 2026 strong.
You can get involved directly and place a donation over at higherhope.org/donate, or you can start your own fundraiser and get your family, your friends, your coworkers involved over at higherhope.org/get involved.
Thank you and happy holidays.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast. This is episode 373, and it is me, Josh, your host, joined by my co-host today, Ian.
Hi, guys. Hi, Josh.
Stepping in for Kendall, because we had kind of a weird week. We got some snow here, a big first snowstorm of the year, and yesterday we were supposed to record an episode. Kendall was planning on being there, and then the power went out for the entire afternoon, and our internet was down, and so we had to basically move the episode to the following day. And Kendall's runs on a pretty tight schedule, and she is actually on a call currently with a family for a video for TCKR. So That is why she is not here today for this episode. But we are also joined today by our producers, Janelle and
Tom.
The lovely Tom.
Hey.
Hey.
This is the first time we've been at the desk together.
Is it?
Yeah. It's always ever been me or Ian. It's never been me and you.
Go team.
But so we got the whole Mile High crew other than Kendall. And today we've got a really, it's just an absolutely devastating case we're going to talk about. A very important one at that. One that's just going to leave you feeling very angry. I know I'm very heated about it because this one, it just, to me, feels like a major injustice to this family. And I think there's so much more to this story than what we know because, of course, police judge this
right
straight out of the gate, as they usually do with cases where people take their own lives. And it seems like police just completely forget, and not necessarily in this case, but most of the time completely forget that staged suicides do happen.
Right.
I was actually trying to dig into it because I was wondering if there's any statistics around this, because I feel like it happens more than people would think, but there's literally not any statistics out there around staged suicides that end up being, or suicide. Cases that are ruled suicides that end up actually being overturned and ruled homicides, right. Because it happens a lot more than you think. And this is one of those cases where a young man, Donye Jones, had everything going for him, 24 years old, really just getting his life started. He had just started a little real estate business and was really starting to get his footings as an adult. And then out of nowhere, he ended up in his family's backyard hanging from a tree.
Right.
And when you start digging into it, you start realizing all these other exterior factors that could have played a major part in his murder, ultimately, starting with the fact that his mother, Melissa, was and is a very well-known protester of police brutality and inequality in Ferguson, Missouri. If you remember back to 2018 when all that was happening,
right? Well, and I think, like we were talking about a little bit beforehand, during that time period, you know, there was some noise made over this case in particular because of the photo that Melissa posted. But in the years since, despite, again, we saw the same thing in 2020 over the George Floyd protests, like despite this sort of activism against police brutality and police misconduct being, you know, pretty constant ever since then, this case in particular has kind of flown under the radar still, and there isn't really much coverage on it at all.
No, I was actually very surprised because it seems like there's so many holes that can be poked into the official narrative that was spinned by police that it's just insane to me that another look hasn't been taken,
right.
Another investigation undertaken with this case, because it just seems like there's so many weird things with this that don't make sense, starting with the fact that obviously his family doesn't believe that he would have done this at all, 100% a no for them. But just the fact that there's so many different facts, but starting with the fact that the bed sheet he was hanging from was unknown. We don't know where that came from. And unfortunately, there was no preservation of evidence. And the very responding officers who initially conducted the quote-unquote investigation were just bad people.
Awful.
Bad individuals.
Awful people.
Awful, yeah. And their conduct is extremely questionable and highly offensive,
right?
As we'll get into. It's just a horrible, horrible story all the way around, but a very important one at that. So let us begin by going back to the beginning, of course, talking about who Donye Jones was. Like, that's the most important thing after all of this, right? Like, getting the story out there, making sure people know who he was. His life mattered, taken far too soon, I should say. And it's just devastating. I mean, this is a mother's son who meant everything to her, and something happened to him, and nobody's looking into it. But Donye Dion Jones was born in Ferguson, Missouri on November 19th, 1993. And by all accounts, he grew up as a sweet and loving child who brought joy to everyone around him, especially his mother, Melissa
McKinney's. Melissa had always been a fierce activist, supporting the Black Lives Matter movement in particular, and she raised Danye, his sister Melisha, and his brother Javon to be strong, outspoken members of their community. Family meant everything to Danye. He was incredibly close to his siblings, as well as his uncle Daniel and his stepfather Derek. Whenever they were together, Danye was always one to crack a joke and get everybody laughing in the room. He could also be a bit reserved or serious around people he didn't know well, but opened up quickly around friends, family, and anyone else he felt comfortable around. Danye had really hit a good stride in his life and started a budding real estate business. But then, as I just told you, out of nowhere, tragedy struck when Danye was discovered hanging from a tree in his own backyard, which left the entire community of Ferguson in shock and confusion. There was no note, just questions about what could have led to such a devastating end for a young man with so much promise. So here's what we know about the events leading up to Danye being discovered in his family's backyard. It was the night of October 16th, 2018, and according to Danye's stepfather, Derek, he and Danye had been watching the Boston Celtics game that evening before Derek's phone alarm went off at 9:15 p.m. to remind him to leave for work, because he worked the night shift. Soon after, Danye's mother, Melissa, headed to bed in the spare bedroom while Danye packed an overnight bag and walked upstairs. His uncle Danny was having a snack at the kitchen table when Danye walked past him and left the house through the back door. Melissa had a vivid dream that night about a Black Panther pulling on her hands and arms, and when she woke up, they were actually physically throbbing, and she remembered specifically that her arms hurt. That nightmare scared her so much that she decided to call her husband Derek, who was on his way home from working the night shift. And when he walked through the door, about 30 to 40 minutes after Melissa called him, he noticed that the lights were still on in the basement. And this was odd because Melissa was very particular about leaving the power and lights on in the house. You know, why waste electricity? And so she knew that Danye knew better than to just leave everything on. And seeing that the lights were still on, Derek yelled down the stairs for Danye, but there was no answer. He told Melissa, quote, "Danye is not down there." Confused, Melissa ran downstairs but didn't see her son. She soon spotted a random brick next to his bed, which immediately alarmed her. She then rushed up the stairs and outside to see if Danye was doing something with the bricks out back. As Melissa opened the back door, she heard a voice that told her to take a look around. Her attention was immediately drawn to the left side of the yard where she saw one of her chairs flipped over on the ground. Curious, she slowly started walking over to the chair when something caught her eye. It was a pair of legs. She rushed over to find her son dead with a noose tied around his neck. In her head, Melissa remembered she was just trying to figure out, why would he do this? It made no sense. How did her son, whom she had just seen before she went to bed in good spirits, go from that to hanging from a tree in the backyard? Melissa's brother and husband especially thought it looked suspicious, even saying so during the 911 call. The operator told them multiple times to cut him down is not something that they should be telling you because they don't know for sure what's going on there. And obviously, you are messing with potential evidence that is there if you start interfering with the scene.
Even if it were more of a cut and dry suicide scene, I don't believe, I can't name an instance where the operator would say, nope, you got to cut him down or clean it up or whatever. I just think that that alone at the start is just such a bizarre form of misconduct coming from the operator who
isn't seeing anything, is just being told something and just telling her what to do.
Right.
Which I don't know if that's part of their protocol or what, but to me, it seems like that was likely outside of the realm of what they're supposed to say.
Completely, completely.
Not to be devil's advocate for an obviously terrible situation, but isn't there a possibility that like they weren't getting the whole information as to what was happening and there was a possibility that the operator thought Danye was still alive?
That's a good point to bring up. I think potentially that's what the operator may have thought is,
right?
If, which again, I don't know the extent of what was exactly said to the operator to have them respond that way. So maybe she had already confirmed that he was deceased. I don't know. But yeah, that is a valid point, I think, to bring up.
Like on the call, it does seem like, I don't know, they say like he's deceased, he's dead. Still, it might be that the operator, you know, not being there, could perhaps, you know, still think like, oh, they don't know.
Right.
Still, I don't know. I still think if the person on the scene is telling you they're deceased, you have to treat it like a crime scene from then on.
Exactly. And as we'll see later on, it becomes very clear that his body was in rigor mortis, and it was very obvious, I think, to the family that he was deceased at that point. Right. So yeah, at that point, it's probably better if they leave him in the event that there is evidence there.
So while Danya's family hesitated with the idea of cutting him down, because again, they didn't want to contaminate any evidence, they decided to take pictures of the crime scene just in case. And when officers arrived on the scene, they would fail to notice or care that his shorts were rolled, and it's very important that they were rolled down, not pulled down, and they were around his ankles. And as Josh had said earlier in the episode, the sheets that he had used to supposedly hang himself didn't come from inside their home. They were from somewhere else. So as Danya's mother realized this, she looked out the back window where she could see some of the officers were gathered, but another officer pulled her away, so she couldn't really take a look at what they were doing. So she was like, I need to take a peek. Why can't I see what's happening? And she looked through the front window where she could still see a detective with a black eye who would be later identified as Sergeant Timothy Anderer, and he was laughing hysterically.
Let's let that sink in for a moment.
Right.
Here you are requesting help from first responders, and the first responders arrive and are now laughing hysterically while your son is deceased in the backyard.
Regardless of the scene, that's just like, it speaks to a level of unprofessionalism at best.
Yeah.
You know, not
that's being nice,
right,
I would say.
Right.
Yeah. That to me is suspicious in itself of
right.
Like, why is he responding this way? And he should be immediately fired for
absolutely.
Conduct like that.
Absolutely.
Which doesn't happen, as we'll see.
So Melissa asked the other two officers who were inside with her, is this what you guys do? You find this funny? You think that this is cool to be laughing at the scene while my son is out there lying dead? And so she turned to the front window again and saw the officers were still laughing. And that's when the two officers who were inside with her grabbed her and forced her to sit down on the couch. They told her that she couldn't look back there, and Melissa insisted on knowing why they wouldn't allow it. Likely because she was seeing something awful.
Yeah.
She was seeing a really...
The other officer's like, oh shit, this isn't a good look for us.
Right.
That these guys are out there cackling. And yeah, horrible situation. This episode of Mile Higher is made possible by Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is a great sponsor. They've been sponsoring the show for a long time. And Kendall and I absolutely love Stitch Fix. We're paying subscribers of it because we love it that much. Because one thing that Kendall and I don't like to do is shop. We really don't like going out shopping. It just takes so long, it's crowded, and it's just kind of a headache, honestly. Because then you've got to try things on. And why do that when you can do all of that right from your house? And have a personal stylist pick out pieces for you sent right to your door that you get to try on in the comfort and privacy of your own home. And then they make it so, so easy to send back anything that you don't want. With the prepaid mailer they include in every box. There's so many times in the past where we would just scroll social media, you know, you get an ad for some clothing brand, you end up buying a bunch of stuff from there, then you get it and you're really disappointed because the quality is really bad or nothing fits. And then you're stuck with trying to figure out how to get it returned to them. And they're really picky about the return policy and all that stuff. And it's just a complete pain. Stitch Fix makes it so easy to get styled, baby. You take a quick style quiz, you share your size, your vibe, and your budget, and then boom, you're matched with a real human. Yes, a real human, not AI stylist, who handles the rest for you. Then they send you a fixed box with clothes that actually fit and make sense for your life. Work, weekends, whatever it is, which is great because depending on what you want, you can switch up the boxes. Sometimes I like more business professional clothes, but a lot of times I just like more loungewear, stuff to wear around the house, or things to wear out on date nights. My stylist makes sure to get me hooked up with all the best pieces out there. And oftentimes I get brands that I already love, and sometimes I even find new brands that I hadn't heard of before that I actually end up loving. So it's a win-win. It's no risk, all style. Try it all on the comfort of your home. Keep it works, send back the rest. There's free shipping and returns always and no subscription required. Plus get a free try on for your first fix. They have clothes for men, women, and children. Get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher and get 20% off your first order when you buy 5 or more items. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher.
She would later recall that Officer Anderer, the one with the black eye, acted very nonchalant about the entire incident, almost as if he wanted to hurry everything up without caring about the details, facts, or evidence. He was reportedly meaner to her than anybody else, and she thinks she knows why. All of the Ferguson police officers were familiar with Melissa due to her being such a well-known and outspoken activist against police brutality. Many thought her fight for justice placed a target on her and her son's backs. The crazy part is that after Officer Anderer saw Melissa break down crying, he started laughing uncontrollably, and she claims both her family and neighbors witnessed it. In fact, it was his disgusting behavior that led Danye's family to look into this particular detective. Melissa remembered Sergeant Anderer handing her husband a bogus business card that directed them to airport police before conclusively claiming, "It is what it looks like. It's going to be a suicide from us." Just that whole back, like that, yeah. That those series of events starting with him laughing uncontrollably when she's not around and then laughing to her face, handing them bogus business cards for airport police and then saying, "Yep, we did our job."
Those actions by themselves make me not believe a word that these officers have to say or any conclusion that they come to. I am questioning it as much as possible because these guys are corrupt. These guys are bad. There's nothing good about them. They are not upstanding law enforcement officers by any stretch of the imagination. And it's amazing to me that they were even allowed to put on a uniform because that is so disgusting, and it lends itself to another conclusion you could draw that these guys are potentially racist,
right?
And there's other motivations behind their behavior. I don't know how you couldn't come to that conclusion. It's very clear that they think this is a joke. They think it's funny. This mother's grieving, and whether or not you truly believe something or not. To Ian's point, the professionalism is zero.
Right. Aside from all of this going on, they now ask Melissa if she could think of any reason why Danye would take his own life. And so she's in the middle of her worst nightmare, but still Melissa had enough presence of mind to conclude that her son would never take his own life, and he would never do it in their backyard where she would find him. Furthermore, he had everything in the world going for him at the time. She can't see any possible scenario in which he would want to take his own life. So, like we were saying, Danye had recently started his own real estate company, which was taking off. The last time Melissa spoke with him, he was downstairs with his uncle doing a Google search about his business, and he was extremely excited about it. They're looking it up, and they're saying that it's this like public enterprise that's doing quite well, and he's like visibly proud about the work he's doing.
Yeah, I believe he had advertisements. He may have had business cards. Like, this was something he was full on committed to, and he had every intention to fulfilling. And so it's like there's that factor. There's obviously I take what the parents have to say very seriously too. It's like they know their kid better than anybody, and they would know most likely their child's struggles and mental health struggles. And again, not to say that somebody's not able to keep that under wraps and keep that from their family and all that. So there's always that possibility, right? That there is something else going on below the surface that nobody saw. But by all accounts, from everybody who interacted with him, there was no flags that would even indicate that this was a possibility. So it's I understand, and if I were law enforcement, I would take that seriously and be like, okay, now maybe we should take a look at this. Let's rule it out that he wasn't murdered before we jump to the other conclusion. So
Melissa also remembered him asking if she could wash his clothes because he had somewhere to be. And he actually even rushed her. He was like, "I got to get going." Then she recalled walking back towards the top of the stairs as he continued watching the video before telling him that she was proud of him. He shook his head and then turned back the video he was watching, and that would be the last time she ever saw her son alive. She said, "The last time I saw him, I was proud. His clothes were clean. He was ready to go out. He was not suicidal." On top of that, Melissa saw that Donnie's face was covered with bruises, which directed her fears even further away from suicide.
I believe he had a busted lip too.
Yeah.
And so, which that indicates, what, he beat himself before he hung himself? There's clearly some type, he got into some type of altercation before he ended up hanging. So how do you explain that? And that's just completely skipped over.
Completely.
Which, good on them, you know, because I think a lot of people will be critical about the fact that they took a photo and then posted that photo. But you have to understand, from their point of view, they knew ahead of time.
Absolutely.
That how this was going to go. And so they knew that if they didn't capture this evidence now, that the police certainly weren't going to do that.
No.
And they'd have far less to even go off of to question the official narrative. So I think it was a right thing to do. It was a smart thing to do so that ultimately they can't refute what he looked like at the scene.
Right.
After Donnie died, this is insane, but the entire family received multiple death threats on social media. And it took weeks for the St. Louis County coroner to conduct an autopsy, which ultimately led to them ruling his death a suicide. Both Donnie's family and police confirmed that there was a chair near his body, but his mother insisted that the sheets didn't come from their house, which the chair, I believe, was from their house. It was the sheets that were not from his house. And the other thing that was peculiar to them was that the knots used for the sheets were advanced Navy knots, and there was no way Donnie would have known how to tie those knots. So there's that. Melissa made the tough decision to post that photograph her brother took of Donnie hanging from a tree on her Facebook page and then captioned it with, quote, "They lynched my baby." And as you can probably imagine, this post went viral, which helped spur a few news outlets to interview her. However, most concluded that they would wait to hear from the medical examiner's office before issuing their final report. And knowing what the medical examiner's findings were going to be, Melissa felt she had to get the word out before the media would also shut her down or label her as just a crazy grieving mother, which I don't blame her at all, because that's exactly what they would have done. Daniel described Donnie and his other nieces and nephews as being the closest thing he had to being his own children. Donnie's uncle described him as having a vision even. He said, quote, "He had plans, a vision to do the wholesale of real estate. His sister said, we've been together his whole life, and he loved us, and he wouldn't go out that way." His sister, Melissa, would also receive a text message from Donnie at 9:30 p.m. the night before his body was found that said, "Sorry, sis," and she simply replied, "I love you." The police report seemed to lean heavily on this text message as if this was Donnie's final goodbye to his family, which again, just said, "Sorry, sis," and was sent to Melissa. However, she didn't respond to Donnie's "I'm sorry" as if it were out of the ordinary or alarming, and when asked further about this text message, Melissa clarified that she'd been visiting the house before receiving the text, and when she went downstairs with her son and tried to talk to Donnie, but she noticed that something was off. He wasn't being as talkative with her as he normally was, and he kept texting someone, so she left. His sorry text appeared to be an apology for not paying attention to her or his nephew when they were visiting. And she doesn't believe at all that this was some sort of final farewell message. Melissa made sure to lay out what she saw as contradictions to the suicide hypothesis that was being laid out by police. This includes the knot and bruises on his face. His wrists had indentations on them and his pants were rolled down and not pulled down. Here's our first clip of Melissa talking a bit more about how Donnie was found.
He had a knot on his face. His wrists had indentations on it, okay? His pants were rolled down, not pulled down. They were rolled down. They weren't scrubs. Weren't scrubs. They were pants. Autopsy. We have not gotten one yet. We have not received one.
Yeah, I also think another important part that has been kind of mentioned throughout this is that, you know, aside from Danye having such a, you know, seemed like a good disposition on life leading up to this event, he loved his family. And I think people forget that, like, when you choose to take your life in such a violent and public way like this, that traumatizes whoever discovers the scene. And as Melissa mentioned earlier, like, he wouldn't have done that in the backyard. He just wouldn't have, because he loved his family. He's texting his sister, "I'm sorry," because he didn't speak that much to her, you know, the last time they saw each other. I think that, like, that alone, just the level of which, like, the closeness, I don't think he would go out of his way to traumatize them, regardless of how he personally was feeling.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. From everything that we know, just from researching this, it really seems like that was the case, that there's just no way he would have done this to his family. But so again, back to the knots on the sheets. Again, they're Navy knots, and Melissa confirmed that Danye was not in any military program, wasn't in Boy Scouts. It wasn't any sort of like outdoor program where he would have learned how to tie these types of knots, because obviously you would need a specific type of knot to be able to hold that kind of body weight and tie it up the way that it was. And that being said, to paint the whole picture of who Danye was, we have to go back to August 9th, 2014, if we remember that time period, when Michael Brown Jr. was shot and killed by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. Witnesses said that Michael Brown's last words were, "Hands up, don't shoot." And his murder sparked an uprising in Ferguson and the wider North St. Louis County area, with the predominantly Black residents demanding justice. And later that year, a grand jury refused to indict Officer Wilson. And again, people took to the streets. The uprising in Ferguson was arguably where the wider Black Lives Matter movement was born. And Melissa was front and center from the very beginning. She was eating lunch with her younger son, Javon, when they heard the news that Michael Brown had been killed, and they rushed over to the Canfield Green apartments where a crowd was gathering. And Melissa recalled speeding to the scene as if it were one of her own kids. She remembered looking at Michael lying on the ground and starting to cry. And she said, "I just looked at him and my eyes started tearing up because I started thinking about Danye and Javon. And you know, I was like, I couldn't imagine." And from then on, she'd be on the front lines of the Ferguson protest day after day and dedicated herself to demanding police accountability for the murders of several young Black men, including Michael Brown, DeAndre Joshua, Darren Seals, Marshawn McCarroll, Anthony Lamar Smith, and Edward Crawford Jr. Melissa and her fellow activists were intentionally trying to cause financial strain on the city of St. Louis, believing it was the only leverage they had to prompt city leaders to do anything and respond to their demands. And when it began to affect their personal pocketbooks, they became angry and started threatening the protesters. The people of St. Louis who participated in the uprising would quickly learn that demanding that the police be held accountable was dangerous business. Many of those later murdered were documented protesters and were outspoken in the media. So keep this in mind, because I think in order to, especially when we get to theories in this case, it's important to understand what had been happening leading up to this. Absolutely. In the years before.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, out of those names you just read, among them, Edward Crawford Jr., he became famous after a newspaper photographer took a picture of him throwing a sparking tear gas canister away from a crowd of people during the Ferguson uprising. And, you know, it's an incredible photograph. I'm sure many of us have seen it before.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was also a well-liked father of four, and the image of him wearing an American flag shirt, his long braids flying behind him as he held the fiery canister, became iconic. Late in the night, Crawford was shot in the backseat of a car and died. Another young man named DeAndre Joshua had been found shot in the head in the backseat of a car that someone had tried to set on fire unsuccessfully. Police said the body of 20-year-old DeAndre Joshua was discovered in a car parked near the Canfield Green apartment complex in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson.
As many of you know, we've been around for a little while now, almost 8 years, and boy, has it been a learning process in growing this media company and all the podcasts and all the needs that our company has. It's ever-changing, and we're always looking for ways to improve upon our show, bring new talent in. And Upwork Business Plus has been a huge help to us over the years. And Upwork just in general has been a great resource for our business. I'm a huge fan of Upwork. There's a couple of people that actually work here that at one point were freelancers on Upwork. And that's actually how I found out about them. And Upwork has got an extensive amount of freelancers at your disposal for all things business. I mean, it could be marketing, it could be social media, it can be editing, it could be if you need a 3D modeler, you need an animation expert, you need a graphic designer, you need a writer, a podcast writer. You name it, Upwork has got a talented freelancer for you. Instead of spending weeks sorting through random resumes, Upwork Business Plus sends a curated shortlist of expert talent to your inbox in hours. You get trusted, top-rated freelancers who are vetted for skills and reliability and rehired by businesses like yours. So if you have a small business out there, this is a great, great way to get talented people working on your business without having to potentially fully commit to a full-time employee, which can be very expensive and takes time to be able to do. But it allows you to also scale your business. So maybe you don't have enough work to hire somebody full-time. Upwork is a great place to find a freelancer who can fill that need for your business. You get reviews, you can message back and forth, and Upwork handles all of the contract paperwork for you. And the payment process is extremely easy as well. We use it from time to time, and we love it. And I highly recommend it to anybody out there who's looking to take their business to the next level. Right now, when you spend $1,000 on Upwork Business Plus, you'll get $500 in credit. Just go to upwork.com/save now and claim the offer before December 31st, 2025. Again, that's upwork.com/SAVE. Scale smarter with top talent and $500 in credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Both DeAndre and his brother were childhood friends with Dorian Johnson, who was a young man walking with Mike Brown when he was killed. Then another young man was shot and killed, and his body was also placed in the backseat of his car before that one was successfully set on fire. His name was Darren Seals, and he was found murdered on September 6th, 2016. Both Danye's mom and Darren Seals were powerful organizers, leaving many to believe this made them targets of police reprisal and maybe even worse. 6 months before his death, Darren participated in a protest at Donald Trump's St. Louis campaign rally. After he left, he was pulled over by the police. Ultimately, about 8 or 9 police officers swarmed around his vehicle, which Darren was driving with his younger brother. A bystander filmed the incident on his cell phone, and when the police finally released Darren, he approached and spoke with the man who had filmed the incident. The police asked the men if they had been at the Trump rally protest, and Darren confirmed that they had. The officer then asked if they had posted about it on Facebook, and he responded, "Yeah, what, that's illegal now?" He said, "No, there's nothing wrong with that. But you might want to pick your enemies better."
You might want to pick your enemies better.
Yeah, dude.
That's setting the tone.
Right. And I don't know. I think it's just like, it's impossible not to look at all of those instances, all of them having been involved with the protests at some point in time and being relatively big members of it, and not see that there's some sort of conspiracy going on to either have them killed directly or at least turn a blind eye when they are.
100%. Couldn't have said it better. I mean, it's so blatantly obvious. And I don't know how you refute that fact, especially when once you know what these officers are saying, when we actually have some accountability for them, it becomes very clear. This is absolutely not out of the realm of possibility for them.
Melissa's sister, Toya, can recall many times when Melissa told her that people were threatening her anonymously. That's why they took a picture of Danye, to show the world what was going on. They would post the picture again, but this time they do it on Twitter. You can find the image online, but be warned, it is like, it's super graphic. It's really fucked up, and I don't know. Yeah, just
yeah, it's very disturbing.
If you do happen to look at it, it's very clearly a hangman's noose tied with twine. As others have stated, hanging yourself in your own backyard as a successful young man is a very strange way to take your own life.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, a lot of people have thought really hard on this and have speculated that using a chair and a bed sheet, I know just from doing this show that you look through other instances of this, it's usually seen with people who are getting life sentences or, you know, death sentences going to prison. And so that adds a whole other layer of complexity to Danye's situation, I think, of what really happened here. But the St. Louis County police would later comment that Donnier's case is still an active investigation and that all initial signs did point to him taking his own life. The chief medical examiner for St. Louis County, Dr. Mary Case, had said that they don't usually try to determine a time of death, which is just bizarre. I've never heard a medical examiner say that. I feel like that's something that they actually want to know. She said it wasn't scientific enough because when the body's outside and it's cold all night, she said, quote, all bets are off, which I don't know if she just meant like to get an exact time or, but like you can use science. There's forensic science that you can use to actually get a pretty good estimate for time of death. Because aside from just body temperature, another factor to look at in assessing the time of death is, of course, rigor mortis, which appears after 2 hours, and the fully rigid state happens between the 8 to 12 hour mark. And if you did both the temperature equation and compared that to the level of rigor mortis, you could be pretty confident that you knew the rough time of death. And a separate investigation would reveal that according to the level of rigor mortis, body temperature, and outside temperature that night, Donnier likely died somewhere around 4:30 a.m. Obviously, this story absolutely exploded after the shocking image of Donnier hanging from a tree surfaced on social media. At first, many people couldn't even believe that this photo was real. They thought it was faked or maybe a prank or a joke. But as the truth unfolded, it became evident that this was very, very real and definitely not a prank. And again, this just looked like another case, the absolutely heartbreaking, where somebody's murder is ruled a suicide and there's so many holes and questions that it's really hard not to think that there is possibly a police cover-up involved.
I think that, we've been basically saying it this whole time, but I don't think you can look at one element of this, again, starting from the 911 operator, and not think, again, maybe it's not a crazy act of cover-up, but it might just be a case of willful negligence, of being like, well, this happened. Let me turn a blind eye.
Yeah, 100%. And Melissa, an activist with a long-time commitment to fighting for justice, shared her motivations for getting involved in activism. She said, when I look at the parents in pain because their children were taken away horribly and the murderers would get away each and every time, I could feel their pain because of the love that I have for my children, which is just a very human statement that I think, especially as a parent, I can 100% relate to. As you've already seen, Melissa's activism had been driven by empathy and a deep sense of duty to fight for others facing racial injustices. And on November 1st, 2018, she held a live press conference calling for the public, the media, and of course, law enforcement to investigate her son's untimely death further.
This is not something that I'm just maybe partially sure about, because I know him. He did not do what they said. I want to see my son to be treated as a person who is loved, who is cared for, and I need his life to matter. I want them to put in the effort that they will put in Sally, Sue, or Billy and Bobby. I want them to put that same effort and to find out what happened to him as they would with them. And also, whoever's involved, they better turn somebody in. They better turn on each other. Because this mother right here, they saw me go hard for Michael Brown and the Jason Stockley case. They ain't saying nothing. I'm going hard for this one. They took mine. They touched mine. They came to my house. They touched mine. Big mistake. Thinking they were going to shut me up, shut me down, or whatever. No, they just really pissed me off. Pissed me totally off. This is something that I've loved for almost 25 years. And they took him from me. No. And if anything ever happens to me or my family, I have like 100 others. Thousands. But I'm going hard for mine. I can't even cry no more. I'm stuck. I can't even grieve. I'm stuck. 25 years. His own business. I'm stuck.
I think, you know, another important thing within everything she just said, but I feel like even in the worst of the worst cases that we've seen and that we've covered, there is more of a police response, even in the cases that they fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
There is more of an investigation.
They're literally laughing
right
at him.
Right.
In her pain.
And it's just, it's like she said, the same as like Mary or Sue or da da da. It is so clear, regardless of if there was a target on their backs, which I think you could say there certainly was, just the racial element at play here, leading to them just not giving a fuck at all, cannot be overstated and
or denied. How do you
right.
just, how do you even deny it? It's right. just, it's all there for you. There was zero investigation done. Zero. They didn't mark off a crime scene. They didn't bring any forensic experts in. They didn't do anything. Absolutely nothing.
Right.
Other than take him to the morgue. That's all they did. And do an autopsy. And they literally did nothing else. They didn't talk to anybody. They didn't question anybody. They didn't go to the neighbor's house. Did anybody see anything? At least go and verify this theory that you have. Right. They did nothing to solidify what happened whatsoever. It's crazy.
Like, again, like the worst police responses that we've seen in this show. This
takes the cake.
This
sure.
takes the cake easily.
I mean, it's just unbelievable that, I mean, they even said it themselves. They're like, this is what it's going to be from us.
Right.
Just telling you straight up, not
this
doing anything else.
You.
This is it. So I mean, her anger and passion really comes through in that clip. And just, you can tell she is hurt beyond anything we could possibly imagine, and fired up too. I mean, as anyone in her position would be. It's truly just unbelievable. You've probably heard us talk about these frames before, but my God, do Kendall and I love Aura frames. We're probably Aura frames' biggest fans. We have a lot of them now. We have a small museum's worth of Aura frames. I mean, we've got probably almost 10 at this point. And between frames that we have at the office, our house, and all the frames we've given as gifts, it is the best gift, by the way. Instead of having a static frame with static photos in it, get your loved ones or even yourself a frame that grows with you, that's got endless cloud storage. You can load videos, photos. You can then give access to your family members so that they can upload content to your frame. And any photos you upload to the app, your family members and loved ones can even download those photos from the Aura app to their phone, which is really nice. Grandparents love it. We got all of our grandparents Aura frames as well. And every time we'd go and visit them, they'd be like, I love this thing because I can keep up with what's going on in your family. They're seeing all the new photos of our daughter. And it really is a gift that just keeps on giving. Everybody that has one loves it. We now give it to everybody that we can. And now everybody in our life has one because we're just such big fans. It's super easy to set up. You can preload it with photos and give it as a gift, which is great. It just needs to be connected to Wi-Fi and then you're good to go. It even comes packaged with a premium gift box and it's beautiful. It really is. They have a whole range of different frames that you can choose from, different sizes, different colors. And for a limited time, you can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver matte frames, which are named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code MILEHIGHER at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com. Use promo code MILEHIGHER. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Promise you won't be disappointed. She also recalled how her son Danye, raised by a strong single mother, had become increasingly connected to activism as he grew older. She said he was in tune with being a strong Black man. He wanted to keep the people conscious and aware of what was going on. She's very proud of that. Despite the risks, Danye had been vocal about his love for his community and his commitment to fighting for justice alongside his family. Melissa's activism had not been without its challenges, because as we already mentioned, they received death threats after this, but she had also received threats before, especially during her involvement in the high-profile cases like the Ferguson movement and following the acquittal of the officers involved in the murder of Anthony Lamar Smith. In the small community where Donyer lived, a prevailing sense of self-reliance and protection had emerged in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement. Donyer's mother recalled the last threat she had received, which had occurred about 3 weeks before her son's death. The threats had escalated from mere intimidation to actual stalking, with individuals lurking outside her home. So now let's add this whole element to this. Fast forward to the fateful night, obviously when she discovered her son dead, she recounted that her attempts to understand his situation were met with resistance from police who had refused to let her watch as they laughed about something. And despite her protests, they claimed there was no signs of a struggle and that the presence of a chair being there was enough to conclude that he took his own life. Just because there's a chair knocked over.
There's a chair in the backyard. There's a fork found in the kitchen. It's just like so fucking stupid.
1 + 1 = 2. And that's their logic. It's insane. When stage scenes happen all the time. Right. That's how murderers get away with shit. That's how criminals continue to be criminals, is that they outsmart dumb police like this. Right. This is just horrible police work on their part to not even verify that this is actually what happened. It makes my blood boil, dude. I'm so pissed off right now. I think when you look at just the actions of the officers that day, I mean, how do you not raise questions of corruption and there being some really bad eggs within the police department and it being compromised? And when taking everything into consideration, Melissa's family took it upon themselves to seek answers regarding the validity of this suicide ruling. And again, they pointed out inconsistencies in the investigations, such as the Navy knots found at the scene, despite his, you know, military Boy Scout background or prior knowledge of him learning any sort of knots before. The foreign bed sheet, which I think is a big, big piece of evidence here. The fact that she would know what sheets were in her house, and the fact that this was clearly not a bed sheet from her house. Where did this bed sheet come from? Why not try to figure out where it came from? Well, that's the first thing you do, figure out where the bed sheet. Then you could at least verify whether or not he actually took his own life. Did Donyer buy this bed sheet?
Right.
At least look into it. They don't do any of that whatsoever. And the fact that this foreign bed sheet also had two sources of DNA on it that was also never tested and was eventually thrown away by police, which whenever I hear police are throwing away evidence, especially in a case like this, a highly controversial case like this, I cannot help myself but think there must be a reason for why.
Right. Again, I think at best it's willful negligence, and at worst it's straight up corruption. Like, they're straight up involved.
Yeah. How else do you explain that?
Right.
And despite changing the classification from suicide to under investigation, the police had returned Donyer's clothes to his family without conducting any sort of forensic tests on them whatsoever. And their decision to keep the bed sheet while neglecting other potential evidence had also raised questions about their true motives. Because why just those and not this? And what are they actually doing with the bed sheet? The revelation that a 911 operator had instructed them to take down Donyer's body before the police arrived, again, adds a whole other layer of suspicion to this case. Melissa believed that if they had cut him down, they wouldn't have the evidence needed to challenge the suicide ruling, which is very valid, because they would be like, well, you contaminated the scene. That's why we can't find any other evidence here. And then it becomes her fault. To make matters worse, when Melissa requested that the evidence be turned over to her so she could conduct her own private investigation, oh, sorry, the evidence is all missing. We don't know what happened. And this happens all the time. It is unbelievable how much shit gets lost in these police departments. It's crazy to me. In this day and age of technology and AI and electronic, literally everything, stuff still magically disappears. And you wonder how. I really wonder how things disappear out of the evidence locker. Was it get legs and just walk away?
Right. No, they throw it out. They throw it the fuck out. Or, they'd rather spend the money on weapons or armored vehicles as opposed to advanced filing systems or better ways to conduct their investigations.
And solve cases. And get the truth.
No, they're going to buy a tank.
Yeah. We need another tank. Yep. It's America for you. The St. Louis County Police Department asserted that they had sent Melissa a letter telling her to come and claim the sheet and that she had 30 days to do so. Oh, so now it's blame Melissa. They explained that the letter was sent in January, and since Melissa did not retrieve the sheet within 30 days of that, they destroyed it. Melissa says, I never received any sort of notification or letter from them that told me to do that, because obviously I would have went and picked that up. Sounds like they lied.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's not the only place they lied. A copy of the medical examiner's report was released, and one of the irregularities in that report that jumps out right away concerned Donye's height, which listed him as 5'7". According to his family and driver's license, Donye was 6'1". So already on another government form of documentation, his literal driver's license, they have his height. And somehow it knocks away so many inches off of him. Another error in the scene's investigator's report concerns who last saw Donye. The report stated that it was Melissa as they walked past each other in the backyard. That was a total lie. Because according to his family, the last person in the house to see Donye was his uncle Daniel, who was sitting at the kitchen table having a snack. And that's been clear since the beginning. At no point in time would anyone within the family have told police, oh, I, Melissa, saw Donye as we walked past each other in the backyard. It was always Daniel saw him last. They also found an unknown male's DNA on the bedsheet that was wrapped around Donye's neck. But no other tests were made on it. No follow-up tests were conducted to rule out his uncle or his stepfather, which is also very strange. Not to say that they did it, because of course they didn't, but you know, with two other people in the house, we know we have unknown male's DNA on the bedsheet. You might as well test the DNA of the two other males who were known to have been with him that night. Why wouldn't you fucking do that?
Doesn't make any sense.
And again, it certainly wasn't them, but
it's just laziness, or are they trying to cover for somebody, or why not? It boggles my mind when this happens and there's evidence there to be tested and they just refuse to test it for some reason and make some excuse for it, when this can literally bring peace to the family who is grieving their son's death, and also provide truth around the case as well. This could be, and also what I don't get to is, why wouldn't you do that as the investigating authorities? Why wouldn't you do it so that you could potentially also clear yourselves?
Right. Especially with everyone looking at you now because of how fucking suspicious this is.
I don't get it, man.
I mean, it's also because they know no matter how much people are suspicious of them, they're the ones making the arrests and charging people. So whoop-de-doo. Now, moving on to the theories, we know that Donye could only have died in one of two ways, suicide or murder. People who support the suicide theory wonder how a violent struggle could have happened in the backyard without anyone else in the house having heard it. However, that was pretty easily debunked when it was revealed that freight trains run directly behind their home, and when a train passed, it was incredibly loud and would shake the entire house. So if there was a period where there was a struggle, a train going by could have easily covered up the sound of it. And given the fact that Melissa earlier was saying that she was literally being stalked, it leads you to believe that the person who did this probably staked out the home and knew that this happened, knew that there's periods in which freight trains come by where there's long periods of time where there's a huge sound cover.
Yeah, no, I think it's a pretty weak argument, because you also have to remember the estimated time of death was 4:30 a.m.
Right.
He was last seen going out the back door around 10 p.m. And so that's a lot of time that lapses there. So there's also a question, what happened in those hours from the time he left his house to the time that he potentially actually died? And the way that he died would indicate that it would have been, you know, a faster death than other forms, right? And so to me, one possibility that comes in my mind is it possible Donye went somewhere and he was attacked, and therefore the struggle never even happened in the backyard?
Right.
And he was deceased before he was actually hung.
Right.
Is that a possibility? I think so. I don't think there's enough there to say that it's not. It's definitely a possibility that he was then brought there by somebody so that they could then stage that scene very quickly without risking being seen.
Right.
I think that's a possibility as well. But then add in the fact that there's trains going back there and there's no, I mean, it's going to cover up. And if the physical assault happened back there, absolutely, and it's late at night, you know what I mean? So it's possible either way, but in my mind I tend to think it's very possible he was already almost deceased or deceased prior to being hung in the backyard.
Absolutely.
And that scene was then set up after the fact to make it look like that's what he did.
Right. And something we haven't pointed out yet is that Donnier's phone did not have cell service at the time of his death. He actually had two cell phones, an Android and an iPhone. And apparently the Android was the device he primarily used, but at the time, neither device had service. He used them on Wi-Fi only and relied on apps to send out texts and to talk. So the text message he sent to his sister Melisha, which again said, "Sorry, sis," would have had to have been sent before he left the range of the Wi-Fi router in his house. So taking all this into consideration, we know that Donnier left with his overnight bag a little after 9 p.m., but maybe didn't take his last breath for what looks like another 7 hours.
That's just so much time.
Right.
And the fact that police even take it upon themselves to figure out what he did from the time he left the house to then, like, how? What do they think happened?
Right.
How does this even make any sense whatsoever?
All we have is the fact that he had told Melisha he was excited to meet a girl, you know? And that's it. That's all we have.
He had an overnight bag.
Right.
He was potentially going to have just a completely normal night somewhere when he was then met with some type of physical altercation.
Right.
It's just crazy to me that they wouldn't at least figure that out. Like, why wouldn't you even take it upon yourselves as law enforcement officers to get the complete story of his last movements? Who was he with? Where did he go? And potentially see if there's other evidence out there that you're just missing because you're just honed in on the backyard that could give you clues as to who is involved. It's just, it's so grossly negligent that it's like, it makes you then leap to, are they involved? Is there law enforcement involved? Is there law enforcement that are seeking retribution on Melisha? I mean, there's so many other things that come to mind. It's just like, how can you not think that way?
Right. You have to. You just have to. So again, Melisha observed that Donnier was not only excited to meet a girl that night, and he was doing extremely well in his life, and his stepdad also claimed that he was in really good spirits. It just makes it super hard to believe that he took his own life. We also cannot help but wonder if the mystery person or people that Donnier went out with that night might be able to shed light on how he ended up dead the next morning. However, we have no idea who these people were, as they have never come forward. Even if Donnier did die by suicide, why wouldn't this person or these people reach out to Melisha and tell her what they know of Donnier's last hours alive? 7 months after Donnier's death, lead detective Timothy Anderer, our awful man from the beginning who was laughing in Melissa's face, still hadn't closed or finished his final report, which would have detailed the investigation and shown specifically what work he did, who he spoke with, and the final results of the DNA test. Melisha and her family were skeptical that Detective Anderer did much, if any, investigation into Donnier's death. And frankly, they got the strong impression that he just didn't care. And I wonder how they got that impression, because he was laughing in their face and just not giving a fuck at any point.
Yeah, we have a detective with a black eye.
Right.
What's that about? What's that related to? We have no idea. With the holidays quickly approaching, you know those porch pirates are coming out of the woodworks. You know there's people surveilling your neighborhood to see when people are out of town to potentially break in and steal your valuable items. But stop them before they even make entry with the SimpliSafe home security system. We love SimpliSafe. We are actually in the process of moving to a new office, and we're going to be setting up a whole new SimpliSafe system there. But we have employees at SimpliSafe Systems, and we've used it ourselves. It is absolutely amazing. The cameras are top-notch. The technology is easy to use. It's intuitive. The app is really good. The clarity of the cameras is bar none. And I've had a number of different security systems over the years that had horrible contracts, fees. Literally, I could not get out of them. I could not cancel their services. It was just such a nightmare to deal with. But SimpliSafe makes it easy. It's affordable, and their systems are customizable to homes of all sizes. So whether you live in an apartment, a townhome, a house, or you live in a, you know, a castle, SimpliSafe can be customized to fit homes of all sizes and just give you that peace of mind, that security you've been looking for, especially as the holidays roll around. You know, you want to make sure you got a doorbell camera on your front door so you can keep tabs on who's coming to the door, who's dropping packages, who's picking up packages. At the very least,
But SimpliSafe has a customizable system, indoor-outdoor cameras, and they have real-time monitoring, which means if it detects somebody coming up to the house and attempting to break in, their real-time monitoring agents can actually start talking to that individual, potentially deterring them from ever making entry into your home altogether. It's an amazing system. It was named Best Home Security Systems by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years running, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee, which means you can try it out and see how great it really is and not just take my word for it. And if you don't like it for any reason, then you get your money back. And this month only, you can take 50% off any new system. And this is one of the best prices you will ever see for SimpliSafe. So don't miss out. Hit simplisafe.com/milehigher again. That's simplisafe.com/milehigher and lock in your discount. Because there's no safe like SimpliSafe for the holidays. We love SimpliSafe. Check them out. So let's talk a little bit about police bias. A group of attorneys who was concerned about racial police bias started the Plainview Project. And this is really interesting because it's an ongoing effort that looks into various U.S. jurisdictions and documents public posts made by law enforcement officers that appear to support police brutality and or white supremacy. Emily Baker White, the project lead, spoke out about their findings, and in one case, she stumbled upon several police officers with public Facebook pages posting troubling material that could impact current cases. The Plainview Project decided to take a closer look at the city of St. Louis, considering its prolonged presence in the national spotlight regarding this exact issue. And most of the content recorded in their database fell into one of three categories. We have statements, we have discriminatory material, and dehumanizing language. Some of the stuff in here is truly shocking, but also not shocking right. at the same time.
It's fucking disgusting, dude. It's awful.
And these are people who are there to protect and serve, by the way. Unfortunately, they found many St. Louis officers referring to groups of people as animals, savages, and subhuman. And that's saying it, you know, that's censoring it a bit. Memes were circulating depicting a person responding to a 911 call with the caption reading, quote, "Oh, I see 3 weeks ago you said fuck the police, so we'll be unable to respond to your emergency today, homeboy." And then we've got, you know, we'll throw some stuff too up on the screen if you're watching. But, you know, Michael Joseph shared police officer's photo. "I'm going to protect and serve the shit out of you." You know, police officer punching a person of color. Then you've got, "I love being white," shared by Mike. God, then you've got somebody sharing an article about the Ferguson protests. And this individual, Shane Coates, said, "God, where is a suicide bomber when you need one?" Which, can you be any more
explicit about just how fucking terrible you are?
My God.
Yeah, man. It's like,
these are law enforcement officers who are there to protect the public. And that's what they took an oath to do.
Right. Is that not a fireable offense?
It is. It should be. Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, if Tom did that on his social media, like, we'd have a problem with it. If any, right. Like, you can't do that shit when you have a professional job of any type, much less being a fucking public officer.
I think, I mean, especially with police officers in the South, you know, we have to take into account that the history of many of these departments truthfully did begin with them being slave catchers, like, over 100 years ago. And so, and I mean, we say that over 100 years ago. That's really not that long ago.
That's two grandparents ago.
That's two grandparents. Exactly.
Yeah, like, it's not far.
And so I think, like, to us, of course, that's a fireable offense. I think this is also something that cannot be overstated, is that within these particular departments and elsewhere, that is kind of that's the ground in which they walk. And so everything that's built above it still has that at its core.
Yeah.
Just saying, our great-grandparents would have witnessed the abolition of slavery.
Right. It was like, not that long ago.
Removed at all.
I mean, this doesn't surprise me at all. Just when we, you know, a few years back when we went down to Meridian, Mississippi to cover the Christian Andriacchio case, that was, you know, getting boots on the ground there and dealing with the DA's office there and just seeing the behavior of public officials and law enforcement and talking to residents of Meridian, Mississippi. It was alarming to hear the things that are said and done and the injustices going on there. And after that, it just became very clear to me that especially, I mean,
this is an issue all over the country, even right here in our own backyard. I mean, there's police departments here that have had very toxic cultures and their own very, very public issues with police brutality and crossing the line. The Aurora Police Department, you know, in our own backyard had their own with I think his name was Daniel McLean.
Elijah McLean.
Elijah McLean, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Elijah McLean. That whole situation.
Right.
And so it's everywhere. But to your point, Ian, I think in the South, it's a whole different story. And that's what we saw and experienced firsthand is like, this is not that far off from a completely divided nation and with completely different values. And unfortunately, not enough progress has been made, especially in those deep-rooted institutions there, including, you know, the local government, state government, and especially law enforcement, that they're still allow this type of behavior. It's even cultivated in some places and supported and reinforced.
And rewarded, it seems like. Mm-hmm.
And rewarded, yeah. Yeah, as we'll talk about, Andrew gets promoted, which is wild. And so it's clearly still okay in some places to act like this and someone make the argument that, oh, this is their freedom of speech, you know, they're allowed to do this. And, you know, that's a whole debate in itself. But this Plainview Project database comprises over 400 Facebook posts from 43 current and former law enforcement officers. And while that was only a small percentage of the city's 1,300 sworn officers and more than 400 civilian employees, this runs much, much deeper than just the officers who are publicly racist. Along with the city of St. Louis, the database featured Facebook posts from seven other departments, including Philadelphia, Dallas, and Phoenix. To create the database, the group used department rosters to identify the Facebook profiles belonging to officers. According to the press release, it read, researchers reviewed each captured post and flagged those posts that, in the project's belief, could undermine public trust in policing. It's worth noting that many of the most bigoted posts came from the account Ron Nighthawk, but the owner of this page had been identified as belonging to Officer Ronald E. Hasty, and this one account was responsible for 31 posts flagged in the database. So that tells you a lot about Mr. Ronald here. The Plainview Project said it took 18 months to create the database, but Internal Affairs was now investigating these social media posts. And as most of us know, not a lot happens with Internal Affairs,
right.
Unfortunately. But you can, yeah, we'll link that for you to check out. It's pretty mind-boggling, pretty shocking what some officers out there are posting and saying online. But an examination of Detective Andrew's Pinterest page, because of course he's got a Pinterest, revealed several racist jokes. Another screenshot of his page showed a photo from the soccer match where Nigeria was playing Germany and the three-letter abbreviations for each country spelled out the N-word. That coupled with the fact that Andrew was caught on his own body camera admitting to brutalizing black protesters and then bragging about it. There's no way to refute body cam footage, which is the beauty of it. So it leaves very little to the imagination about his true motivations and just his overall willingness to harm the black community. It's very obvious. Furthermore, the Department of Justice report on the Ferguson Police Department contains statements from officers who expected or demanded compliance even when they lacked the legal authority to do so. One of the report's key findings revealed that Ferguson's law enforcement practices were influenced by the city's focus on revenue rather than the public's safety needs. We love that, revenue over public safety needs. Which the focus on revenue compromises Ferguson's police department and contributed to a disturbing pattern of corruption. Because now it's about the money. And it's always about the money.
Right.
It also shaped the municipal court and raised due process concerns about its willingness to inflict harm on Ferguson's citizens. And we cannot overlook what Melisha had said about something not being right about Donye and him being distracted and texting somebody. Derek said he was watching a basketball game with Donye till about 9 p.m. when Derek had to head off to work. Donye then texted his sister that he was sorry. And if this text actually represented a final goodbye message to Melisha, as the police claim, that meant that Donye had already made up his mind about taking his own life. Which this is a bit strange considering he had left with an overnight bag that contained two toothbrushes, deodorant, and a change of clean clothes, which his mother had washed from earlier in the evening around 5 p.m. It's just all very weird that somebody who is, that was their plan that night to go and unalive themselves, would go through the trouble of getting all ready for what seems like a date night, right?
Right.
And going out to spend time with somebody close to them. So it's just, it's unbelievable that the police would not have started poking, you know, holes into this and looking for answers on what he was actually doing. Where was he going? Who he's going to see? Let's track his movements. Let's try to create a timeline for those 7 hours of that nobody knows about. And yeah, not only that, his car had not been running all week. And according to his family, he would have needed to have been picked up by someone. So if you combine this knowledge with what Melissa described as disrespectful, boisterous laughter, and now lumping in with the various details of the medical examiner's report and all the things they got wrong, it's very understandable at the end of the day that Donye's family would have their doubts about the police's official ruling. And obviously, they know something's up. They know that there's a reason they don't want this to be investigated. Because again, Melissa had also said that strange car has been parked outside of their house for a long time. And, you know, it seemed like it was increasing in frequency leading up to Donye's death. And it appeared as though these occupants of these vehicles were in fact police. And about 2 weeks before Donye died, Melissa confirmed that at least 5 of them were wearing cop shirts. And at one point they got out of the car and just stood outside the house and stared in their direction, which intimidation, maybe. We're watching you. You know, we're watching your every move. We're waiting for you to slip up.
We know where you live.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sounds like a threat to me.
Right.
Things get even more bizarre when we, you know, think about how the autopsy is done, the findings that they came up with. Dr. Gershom Norfleet, the pathologist who examined Donye's body, claimed the county police had found 2 sources of male DNA on the bedsheet, which belonged to Donye and another unknown male. It also seemed odd that when police found a second set of male DNA on the sheet, everyone, including the pathologist, assumed it was from another male in the house. But again, this was never tested, so they can't confirm or deny this theory.
And you know why they're saying, like, oh, we assume this is from another male in the house. It's just to keep everything within this unit.
Yeah. Got to stick to the script, right, of the official narrative here. But then there's the fact, like, if this was a sheet, you know, from the house, where's the DNA from Melissa? She's the one doing the laundry in the house. She stated that my DNA would have been on it, and she stated that this was not a sheet from her house anyway. So clearly, where'd it come from? And it obviously makes sense that there'd be a need to test this DNA to figure out the origin of it. And what's even worse about this whole thing is that the bed sheet was placed in the body bag with Donye's body for some reason. The sheet was not treated as potential evidence and secured in a separate bag to be preserved, but instead it traveled to the morgue with Donye's body, which probably caused it to be further contaminated with even more DNA. It's or, you know, whatever else, bacteria, who knows. But taking everything into consideration, it's hard not to think that maybe some cases should have had a higher threshold of evidence than others, and maybe we should remember to apply social and historical context following a death that greatly mirrors in what the family believes was a racist lynching, and we should expect our local governments and those there to protect and serve the public to try just a little bit harder and rule out other possibilities before you just jump to conclusions.
Right.
My God, it just seems like basic common sense. I don't get it.
I mean, and it's just, like, we keep saying protect and serve. It's like I don't think it could be forgotten that the cops are supposed to work for us. They're supposed to be working for Melissa to try to figure out what the fuck happened. And if she is not satisfied with their evidence regarding their ruling, again, they are supposed to work for her. That should be enough for them to be like, okay, we will continue. And they say they are, of quote, you know, quote unquote, but
yeah, but that's not what happens.
No, absolutely not. And so because of this, Melissa has had to basically be her family's investigator. And so there have been some new theories that she's thought of in the years since. The first one being that Melissa later came forward after hearing about her step-nephew who had the nickname Deanie Boy. She'd been told that he was possibly involved in getting Donye out of the house the night he died, and that member of her family's believed he was involved in someone else's death as well. Melissa vividly recalled a conversation she had with him. He was bragging about serving people, you know, harmful drugs and not thinking twice about it. Disgusted, Melissa threw him out of the house. We also found out that Deanie Boy was accused of threatening a woman who would later turn up dead. And while this was purely speculation about his possible involvement in Donye's murder, it did paint the picture that he could cause harm to others.
'Tis the season where you need a variety of clothing items, whether that's for a holiday event, maybe you're dressing up, maybe you're looking for something cozy, some nice sweats. Maybe you're looking for shoes. Maybe you're looking for a new pair of sneakers or some snow boots. And maybe you're trying to be fashionable along the way. Because as I've stated many times, I really struggle in the fashion department and I'm really trying to elevate my style and present myself better. And so Revolve could be your one-stop shop for all of those things because they carry a huge variety of high-quality items from many of your favorite brands. For example, I have been recently looking for some good snow boots so I can go build a snowman with my daughter outside. We finally got snow here in Colorado, and that kind of triggered me to realize that I don't have any snow boots. So I looked on Revolve, and I found these really, really cute nylon boots from the brand Moon Boot. They're called the Icon Low Nylon Boots in Cream. I just think they're so fun. They look like they would be super warm, and I can't wait to get them in my hands. I also needed a new pair of running shoes, and my favorite running shoe is the Hoka Clifton 10s, and they carry them. I also noticed Hoka has kind of a boot sneaker now. Really interesting. They're called the X Half Days Kaha 2 Frost Mach GTX sneakers. Also, if you're looking for Uggs, the classics, they got Uggs. And they have tons of pretty dresses and cozy sweaters and sweatpants. Really something for everyone. Revolve has 1,200 plus brands and 100,000 styles across fashion, beauty, and home, everything from high-end to emerging and exclusive labels. And their latest, most sought-after trends from top brands like Helsa, Lovers and Friends, Amanda Up Richard, Norma Kamali, Superdown, More to Come, and Free People. They have new arrivals daily. They offer inclusive sizing options, everything from extra, extra small to 4X. They also offer personalized product recommendations based on your favorites and purchase history. And they offer amazing customer service, plus fast and free shipping and returns. Whether it's a weekend away, a big night out, or a holiday party, your dream wardrobe is just a click away. Head to revolve.com/milehigher, shop my edit, and take 15% off your first order with code milehigher. Fast two-day shipping, easy returns. It's literally the only place you need to shop from. That's revolve.com/milehigher to shop my favorites and get 15% off your first order with code milehigher. Offer ends December 25th, so happy shopping.
Melissa also found out from Dini Boy's father that he and his son had recruited Danye to run drugs for him. She does recall Danye telling her once that he had done some things she wouldn't be proud of. When she pressed him for more information, he admitted to selling drugs to earn enough money to start his real estate business. But when he expressed that he wanted out, they had started threatening him. So that does, that, like, I understand why Melissa's putting that forward as a potential theory. But then there was also a group of white boys who were allegedly harassing Danye not long before his death. Danye's mom remembered him mentioning something about some white boys being after him and that he wanted to buy a gun. He felt so threatened, he felt like he needed to buy a gun. His uncle remembered him asking if he knew where he could get a firearm and that some white boys were looking for him as well and that they had been messing with him. He told his uncle that they had been calling him the N-word, so he knocked them out. All of this went down roughly a month or two before Danye died, and while there are no further details to build off of it, it is possible these boys may or may not have had something to do with Danye's death. As we mentioned earlier, Melissa had gone downstairs to look for Danye when she saw the brick. She had no idea why it would be there, and upon carrying it to the back patio where it came from, she found Danye hanging in the tree. Since that moment, she has suspected that the brick was a weapon that Danye was keeping close. Something he could use to defend himself against an attacker. If that is, in fact, why Danye was holding a brick next to him while he slept, that would seem to suggest a few other things. For one, obviously, he was afraid of being attacked. And two, he was afraid of being attacked by someone who could get inside of the house, or at least onto the property. Was he afraid of random intruders or of somebody connected to the group of white boys? Did they know where Danye lived and how to get into his house? Was he afraid of his drug-dealing step-cousin? Or, like we had mentioned, was he afraid of the cops or guys in cop shirts who were stalking the home? I mean, there's so many possible people that, like, yeah, I kind of understand that the brick instead, like, when you first said the brick, obviously it comes to mind like that as more of a threatening thing. But understanding it as a weapon because Danye felt threatened, that makes a lot of sense as well.
There's so many different ways this could go.
Right.
And it's just, which is the more you look into this, the more you realize how much should have been investigated. And we shouldn't be sitting here with all of these questions. This is all likely easily answered by a basic police investigation. And because it was never done, all we're left with is what ifs.
Right.
And why? And it's just crazy to me. He was going somewhere. So maybe he brought that with. Maybe, I mean, for all we know, someone could have went in the house and placed it there. I mean, as wild as that sounds, somebody also got the chair somehow.
Right.
Somebody sneak in the house, pull the chair out, place the brick by his bed. I mean, who knows?
It's just, there's so many, and it's because, like you said, it's because the cops didn't investigate a fucking thing. They didn't look into anything.
Oh, man. It's just insane.
Like, all the theories we have are coming from Melissa. She's the only one who's investigating.
Yeah, and that happens way more than it should. It's really sad. But Donye's family members are still on social media. They still run a Facebook page called Justice for Donye Jones. We'll definitely link it, definitely show them some support, where you can find out, you know, more facts, see more photos of Donye's family, including pictures and updates. And aside from the initial suicide ruling, the Ferguson Police Department has failed to come forward with any more information or even comment on Donye Jones's case. There's really not much updates out there on the internet in the last couple of years. Seems like it's kind of just started fading a bit. And that's sad, because this is one that should never fade, because it speaks to a much larger issue. There's something seriously wrong going on in St. Louis County. And the amount of injustice there is truly on a whole other level. But yeah, they consider the case closed and clearly didn't find any discrepancies in their findings. And they want this to go away. They want to sweep it under the rug and hope that it's never brought to the surface again. And despite everything she had to go through, Melissa remains strong in her mission to find justice for her son, which is very admirable. It's just I have so much respect for Melissa and her whole family for everything that they went through and continue to go through, because it never ends. And thinking back, she remembered Donye's excitement for the future and his determination to take care of his family. And his words said, "Just watch, I'm going to take care of you, Ma. I got you." And this gave Melissa hope. But amid all those memories, Melissa has never been able to shake off her doubts about Donye's death. And how could you at all? I mean, I don't think anybody out there can refute those feelings of doubt in this case. There's just no way. If you, and I know there'll be people that listen to this, and I know people, there'll be people that comment and say some really horrible things and hurtful things. And it's just, I don't get it. It's so clear that there is so much more to this story in this case. And we won't ever know, likely because of the law enforcement involved. Melissa posted a video titled "Donye Embracing Mom" on Facebook with a caption that read, "This video breaks me every time. I can still feel his hugs and hear his deep voice saying, love you, Ma."
Oh my God.
But Donye's entire family hopes that one day investigators will give them the benefit of the doubt, and maybe a good one will come along that feels compelled to take another look at this, or a larger, more powerful authority comes in and cleans house,
right,
of this clearly corrupt police department and do something good and bring some peace to this family. Because to them, it doesn't matter who did it. They just want that person or people involved to be held accountable and to know the truth. They want to know what really happened one way or another. I think at the end of the day, that's all they want. They just want to know. They have all the information that they can possibly get, and that this was professionally investigated by so-called professionals, that they have everything they need to find peace and you know, start really dealing with this. But if you do have any information regarding Donyu's death, maybe you saw something, knew something, heard something from somebody, you can reach out directly to his family because obviously the police aren't investigating it. You could probably submit an anonymous tip to St. Louis County as well, but the family's asked that you direct those to them before via the Justice for Donyu Jones Facebook page, which again will be linked. They also, years back, started a GoFundMe established in Donyu's name that you can visit and donate at as well to support Melissa McKinney's campaign for justice. We'll have that linked. And also, on that note, if anybody in Donyu's family or involved in this case is interested in reaching out to Higher Hope Foundation, we'd be happy to help in any way that we can to try to help keep this going in any way, shape, or form. All that information is at higherhope.org. But this is, this one is just, I'm angry. I want to punch a wall right now. And it's just, I know this just, I don't doubt any of this at all. Like, I feel this and I'm not even there. And I know from firsthand experience being in the South and working with other families that this is all so very real. It needs to change, man. We need change in these places. And it's just enough is enough. We're all humans. We all deserve to have the same level of care and respect given to our loved ones' cases. It shouldn't matter who you are, what the color of skin is. It's just, it's time that we evolve as a species, right. My God, because everybody deserves the same at the end of the day. I'm curious to know your thoughts, because I think the consensus among the four of us here, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that seems very clear that he was likely murdered. And it just wasn't investigated. And even if it wasn't, you can't refute that it wasn't investigated.
Right. I mean, I think that's the sticking point for me is I'm almost certain he was lynched that, but I think the issue at large is that the police's level of negligence, of clear racism, of hatred, of stalking, of all this fuck shit is like, it's the point. That's the point of all this. And I think we, you know, we kind of like, as a culture, we're lulled into a sense of security, you know, oh, this sort of thing doesn't happen anymore because of these protests, because of 2020. And I think recently, you know, obviously with a more conservative administration, again, that's been woken up. I just think it's important to note that this was in 2018. This was not that long ago. And there are cases from last year and likely this year that have less coverage as well that also fall under similar things. And yeah, I just can't. It just speaks to me of, like you've been saying, like a rotten nature of a police department. And whether they were directly involved in his death or not, their role in the investigation is tantamount to murder to me because they're refusing to do anything.
Yeah. I don't know how you can even make an argument the other way. I think, again, regardless, there's not enough information provided to rule the other one out. So I don't think you can just walk away from this and just say, that's for sure what happened.
Right.
No matter who you are and no matter what you think, I think there's just no way. There's more to this. There's 7 hours of unaccounted time that we have no idea who he was with, where he was, how did he end up there? Let's retrace the steps. None of that was done. So I don't think you can definitively say any of the police's narrative is true. And ultimately, I hope one day there is potentially someone who comes forward and can give more details about what happened that night and what was Donyu up to, who was he with, that could potentially crack this back open. But curious to hear your thoughts out there. If you have a differing opinion from ours, I'm curious to hear what that is. As long as you're respectful, if you're not respectful, I could give a damn and won't be reading your comment. So, and again, this is a family that's grieving. They lost their loved one, 24 years old, man, way too young. So, you know, send some love their way. If you're on Facebook, check out the Justice for Donyu Jones page. And again, you know, thank you to those that support our sponsors. Our sponsors are what makes our foundation, Higher Hope, even possible to be able to grant financial assistance to families in the first place. So
also our merch, milehighmerch.com, 100% of the proceeds go directly to Higher Hope Foundation. So keep that in mind as well.
Yes. And thank you to everybody out there who's been supportive, who's donated, who's purchased merch. It's huge. We're able to do a lot of amazing work through the foundation, thanks to all of you out there. And those that just watch and listen to the show and listen to the ads, support all that. We appreciate you so much. But that's going to be it for us today. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.